Poor Joseph. He has been through a lot. An awful lot. He started out in his father's house. Seemed like things were going his way. He was headed for leadership over his family. By accident of birth, that he was Rachel's child, and by strength of character, that he seemed to be the one that his father could rely upon, looked like he was going places, like he was even dressed for success. His father made him a coat, a special coat. His brothers, however, nipped that in the bud, sent him to Egypt with some slave traders, sold him to the captain of the guard, the Pharaoh, which was not a bad assignment for a slave. So he was figuring, well, maybe there's hope. So he worked diligently in the house of that man, Potiphar, was gaining some success, was declared to be overseer over the other slaves in the household. Maybe, just maybe, as happened in Egypt, if he had done very, very well, he could have bought his freedom eventually and maybe returned to his father's house and made himself a life in Egypt. But it was not to be. Potiphar's wife made the move on Joseph. Joseph resisted. She falsely accused him. So now he winds up out of the house and into the jail. Then there's a glimmer of hope. Some VIPs were thrown into jail. Baker and a cupbearer. Joseph figures, well, now maybe we've got a chance. So God gives him the interpretation of people's dreams. And he tells them, remember me when you return to Pharaoh. Thinking, God has provided a way out of here. And nothing happens. But yet, Joseph had apparently the right reaction to all these trials, as we will see in this next chapter. He could have taken the wrong reaction. He could have reacted with bitterness and anger. But he didn't. Genesis chapter 41, starting in verse 1. Now it happened at the end of 2 full years. That's 2 full years since Joseph interpreted the dreams of the cupbearer and the baker. 2 full years Joseph has sat in that jail without knowing that anything was going to come of this. That Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he was standing by the Nile. And lo, from the Nile there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed in the marsh grass. And behold, 7 other cows came up after them from the Nile, ugly and gaunt, and they stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. The ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 sleek and fat cows. Then Pharaoh awoke. He fell asleep and dreamed a second time, and behold, 7 ears of grain came up on a single stalk, plump and good. And behold, 7 ears, thin and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. The thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump and full ears. Then Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. Now in the morning his spirit was troubled. So he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them to Pharaoh. Remember what we said last week about dreams. These are dreams that he remembered. They're dreams that troubled him. They're dreams that had some sort of emotional content. That in the morning he knew that there was a dream that meant something. There was a dream that had to be interpreted. The Egyptians also put a great deal of stock by dreams. So he went and called for the magicians of Egypt, whose specialty, whose profession, was the interpreting of dreams. They said to them, what does it mean? Not doubt very much. They said, I don't know. But rather, I think they did the old soft shoe. They were giving him all this interpretation, all the rest of it. And when they were done, Pharaoh just said, not working for me. And the next guy would stand up and say, I got an idea that means this. Pharaoh would just shake his head and say, no, that doesn't work for me either. That just doesn't seem to capture all this. So Pharaoh then looked around at these people and said, "So, who's going to tell me what this means?" Everybody's looking at each other nervously, shuffling their feet, looking at their shoes, maybe, you know, pretending to, you know, that there's something under their fingernails. And now the chief cupbearer is there, because the cupbearer was with Pharaoh all the time. So Pharaoh wanted a drink, well, you know, he had to be there. The cupbearer was, as I mentioned last week, he's the guy who tasted the wine to make sure nobody was poisoning Pharaoh. So it wasn't like he was a waiter. He was a very trusted man. He had to make sure that there was no plot to murder Pharaoh, to make a coup. So he was there. So he figured, well, I got to say something. Verse 9, and the chief cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh, saying, "I would make mention today of my own offenses," which is why he'd shut up for 2 years, right? You got to go to your boss and say, "Remember that time you were so mad at me that you almost fired me? And you yelled at me all day. And you marched me down to HR and you were telling them that, to get rid of this nasty piece of work that worked for you. And you left me there. And I was filling out the forms. And they told you they couldn't get rid of me because you didn't have grounds. And so you had to reinstate me. Remember that?" Okay. Are you going to bring that up to your boss? And this is even worse. That's just losing your job. Here the guy almost lost his life. So of course he's going to shut up. He's going to pretend like it never ever happened. Jail, prison, don't know anything about those. No idea. Prison, nope, what you talking about? But now here comes the chance. And he speaks up. Verse 10, Pharaoh was furious with his servants, and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. We had a dream on the same night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now a Hebrew youth was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard, and we related them to him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each one he interpreted according to his own dream. And just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me in my office, but he hanged him. Oh, somebody who's actually good at this. Somebody who has a track record of success. Sounds like it's worth a try. Verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they heard we brought him out of the dungeon. When he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. We don't know exactly what was going on there. There have been some hypotheses that I think the clearest thing to say is just like he looked like he'd been in jail. And so from jail to stand before Pharaoh, you'd want to clean him up quite a bit and make him look like he was part of the court instead of part of the jail. Verse 15. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I have had a dream, but no one can interpret it, and I have heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." What a chance for Joseph, right? Here you go, you're standing before the CEO of the company, and he said, "You know, I hear you're pretty smart." What's the temptation to say? "Yeah, I'm the smartest guy you got working for you. You need to promote me, boss. I need a raise." But it's a testimony to Joseph's character. He said that all that time that he spent in jail didn't harden him, but rather it softened him and it changed him. And he made him somebody that God could use. Because in verse 16, Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, "It is not in me." God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. How many of us would have had the character of Joseph? I mean, even in our day-to-day life, in the progress of our jobs, or in the process of meeting people in the neighborhood, or teaching people something, how many of us pray beforehand and give God the glory afterwards? Very difficult thing to do, sometimes. I mean, in my particular day job, I work among skeptics and the best agnostics or, you know, followers of other gods, and it's very, very difficult to say, "Well, you know, how did you get this done so fast?" "Well, I prayed about it and God did it." They'd be calling the HR to, you know, the EAP program to have a psychologist come up and meet you. Right? And just the other day, somebody at work had that that health issue. I said, I'm going to pray for you about it. He kind of was walking to get coffee, and he kind of did a double step, and he said, okay, and walked on. Because that sort of thing just is not in those contexts. And I don't think Pharaoh was expecting that in this context either, but it's something that we as believers are called to do. And otherwise, it's like we're taking credit for something we don't do. We're not doing. We're plagiarizing God's work. God's doing His work through us, and we're taking credit for it. Right? It's like, you know, his master bricklayer is building a wall, and he gets it done, and he's time to wash his tools, and it's lunchtime, and he hands his tools to this assistant standing there and says, hey, why don't you wash these up while I get lunch? And the guy who contracted the wall comes by and said, what a wonderful wall you built. And the guy who's washing tools said, well, thank you very much. It's one of the finest walls I've ever built. That's the kind of thing we do with God. And he hands us the tools to wash up, and we say, yeah, I built the wall all by myself. And, whoa, wait a minute. So Joseph had the strength of character that sometimes I wish that I have, because I mess up. It's hard to do sometimes. It's easy to do in the context of the congregation. Somebody comes up and says, that was a great sermon. You know, and say, well, you know, it's not, you know, God worked through me. It's easy to do in a congregation. But how about at work when you've, you know, fixed something, or you've won the big contract, or you've done something that the boss is pleased with? You know, how many of us say, well, you know, God, I prayed about it, and God gave me the answer in school or wherever, that we can say, well, God worked through me to accomplish this. People think you're nuts. But, you know, they're the ones who are nuts, because they have the wrong idea about how the world works. They think that they themselves have the power to do things, but they don't. It's God who has all the power, and we need to acknowledge Him and give Him the credit, not just in things that are obviously of God, but things in the workplace. Because one of our thoughts is, well, that's not appropriate. What you mean by it's not appropriate means that it's going to shake people up. Well, one of our missions in life is to shake people up when they need to be shaken. You know, people don't need to be shaken, all right, let them be, but when somebody's falling asleep in the canoe and it's heading for the waterfall, you need to shake the canoe, you need to wake the guy up. And we need to shake people up at work. And I've had good conversations at work that have started with simply saying, well, you know, I thank God that He gave me the answer to this, because it was a difficult one. Oftentimes it doesn't happen right then. People kind of give you that look. You know, the look like, you know, okay, whatever you say. And then maybe they'll come back a little later on and they'll ask you a question. Or they'll talk to you about something or say, you know, how does that work? And then you can start conversation. People complain that they never have any opportunities to talk to anybody at work. Opportunity to speak to anybody at work hardly ever start with saying, you know, son, sit down, you're a sinner and need to be saved. Those hardly ever work very well. I've known people who have tried it, but they hardly ever work very well. What usually works is giving an honest assessment of who we are and who we depend on and what He's done for us. And when we do that, that opens up opportunities to get deeper into people's lives and to speak to them about who God is. You know, sitting around the table talking about a newspaper story or whatever, and just make mention about how it fits into God's plan, or you know, you can start all kinds of things, all kinds of conversations. And so Joseph started off this conversation on the right track. He said, well, you came to me, ha, boy, were you ever fooled. You should have come to God. But, you know, since I'm here, God will give you the interpretation through me. Verse 17. So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph. In my dream, behold, I was standing on the bank of the Nile, and behold, seven cows, fat and sleek, came up out of the Nile, and they grazed in the marsh grass. Lo, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, such as I had never seen for ugliness in all the land of Egypt. And the lean and ugly cows ate up the first seven fat cows. Yet when they had devoured them, it could not be detected that they had devoured them. They were just as ugly as before. Then I awoke. I saw also in my dream, and behold, seven ears, full and good, came up on a single stalk. And lo, seven ears, withered, thin, and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. The thin ears swallowed the seven good ears. And I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. I find it interesting. I've sometimes been puzzled by this. Well, I can say I'm still puzzled by this, but sometimes in the past I've just skipped over it and said, well, he just repeated what he said. But you got to stop and say, why is God repeating it here? And I guess there is an emphasis here that kind of puts an extra exclamation mark on this. That just stop back, step back a little bit and think about what's going on. Here we have the ruler of the most powerful nation on earth, and God spoke to him in these two dreams to the benefit of this guy in the prison. And in our estimation of things, it should have been the other way around. Right? The guy in the prison should have gotten the dream to help Pharaoh. But in God's estimation, the guy in the prison, who was his servant, who was God's servant, who was dedicated to God, was the guy who was deserving, shall we say, of a special handling by God to give this special delivery package to the ruler of the country in order to help this guy who was in prison. I'm sure Joseph never expected anything like this. I'm sure in Joseph's estimation, all he wanted was to get out of the jail and maybe get on with his life. But to be called before Pharaoh, that was something that was so off the wall that he never could have predicted it. You know, in our lives, sometimes we're in the middle of stuff and we say, I don't know how this is going to work out. I'm not even looking to win anymore. I'm just looking to break even. And I've been, you know, serving God at this, and it's been one disappointment after the other. It's sort of like one of those, you know, old Roadrunner cartoons where the Wile E. Coyote gets hit by the anvil and then the rock hits, and then after that, you know, he catches on fire, and it just goes on and on. You're thinking, what's God up to? Because I've been hit so many times, you know, I'm staggering around, my eyes are going in a different direction, my hair is standing up on end. And maybe Joseph was the same way, but he didn't know the final chapter in his story. We do, because we're looking back 3,000 years, maybe closer to 4,000 years, on what went on, and so we see the ending of the story. But in our own lives, we don't see the end yet. By the time we see the end of the story, it's too late, right? Because then we'll be standing before God, and we'll be doing our own version of, oh, of course, that's what that was for. That's why that happened, and that's why that happened. But when we're going through it, you just have to kind of bear with it. You know, even in fiction, when you're reading or writing fiction, one of the things that you enjoyable for authors to do is they'll drop a red herring into the story. And you read the red herring, and then you read on, and you stop, and you think, well, what was that there for? And then you maybe get four or five chapters later, and you say, oh, that's why that was there. And otherwise, we like that. This thing gets dropped into our lives, and we said, what's that there for? I call them puzzle pieces. Okay, and I've occasionally gotten what I used to call puzzle pieces in the mail. In other words, you get something from God that's a jigsaw puzzle piece, because Sharon and I love doing, well, she more than I, doing jigsaw puzzles. I don't have the time for it that she, you know, she makes time. But you get a puzzle piece in the mail, and you don't know what the puzzle looks like. You don't even know if this piece goes to your puzzle. It might go to somebody else's puzzle, but it's definitely a piece. And so what Joseph got was this great, the puzzle pieces that you can look at in Joseph's life in order to get him before Pharaoh are this interpretation of dreams, his steadfastness of standing up to Potiphar's wife, and all the rest of it. They all come together to make this picture of the new prime minister of Egypt. We didn't know that at the time. So too, we get puzzle pieces in the mail. It's like the puzzle pieces in the month club, I guess the day club. And we get these things, they're saying, what is this supposed to be? And that's our lives. God sends us this stuff, and we look at it and we say, well, God went to some special trouble here, and I don't know what it's for. And that's because you don't see the whole puzzle yet. It's not time yet. Verse 25, now Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has told the Pharaoh what he's about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, the seven good ears are 7 years, and the dreams are one and the same. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven thin ears scorched by the east wind will be 7 years of famine. As I have spoken to Pharaoh, God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt. And after them, 7 years of famine will come, and all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will ravage the land. Now the abundance will be unknown in the land because of that subsequent famine. It will be very severe. Now as for the repeating of this dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about. Now he's done what Pharaoh had asked him to do, interpret the dreams. It's kind of interesting that when you get truth like this, you slap yourself in the forehead and say, of course, that's what it means. Right? Even nowadays, us looking back, and it's like, what a beautiful picture of abundance and famine. The years of famine ate up all the abundance. So that even we look back at it and say, what a great picture that is. Now I'm sure Pharaoh, now that Joseph gave him the interpretation, he said, of course. Of course that's what it is. And he probably turned to his magicians and dream interpreters and said, why didn't you guys think of that? But anyway. But Joseph has stopped. And sometimes, sometimes we just wilt and don't give God the glory. So too, when people ask us for something, there's usually both what people call a felt need and a real need. The felt need that Pharaoh had was to explain his dreams. But he had a real need. It's now exposed. The real need is, now what do I do? So Joseph is now going to respond to his real need. Verse 33, now let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise and send him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land, and let him exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of abundance. And let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming, and store up the grain for food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority, and let them guard it. Let the food become as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine which will occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land will not perish during the famine. You know, oftentimes we do that too. Right? Somebody comes to us with a felt need. They answer the felt need and they go on their way. But there's a real need here. There's a real need here. And we need to sometimes come out and go beyond what we've been asked to do. Because after all, we have the Spirit of God permanently in us. We have the Word of God. If there is anybody on the whole earth that could give counsel to somebody that will work, it would be us. It would be believers. Because the counsel of God will stand. But yet, oftentimes, we just will. We just say, you know, it's sort of like somebody asking, do you know what time it is? And the answer is yes. They would answer the question, well, you haven't answered the real need. The need is what time it is. You know, somebody asks us, well, do you know of a good divorce lawyer? And the felt need. And, you know, somebody at work or somebody in our neighborhood comes up and says, you know, good divorce lawyer. And the felt need would be say, well, okay, you know, I know this lawyer and give them the phone number. The deeper answer is, well, what's going on? What's going on? Why are you looking for a divorce lawyer? And the real deep need, the real need is reconciliation. The felt need is a divorce lawyer. The real need is reconciliation. So we as believers might be able to work in their lives to put that marriage back together. That might be a case where that person is finally at the point in their life where they're willing to take God seriously, because everything else they've tried is now blowing up in their face. So there is a felt need and there is a real need behind it. And we should be bold to go on beyond that felt need. Now, I'm not saying be busybodies and going probing into everybody else's business all around us, but when somebody asks us a question, we can go a little deeper. I mean, just as simple as, you know, in the morning, people greet each other and say, how's it going? You don't really expect an answer to that, do you? I expect an answer. people ask me that question, I give them a real answer. Right? Other people, the worst case is, I say, you know, somebody asks me, how's it going? I say, oh, it's a really hard morning. And they say, yeah, it's going fine for me too, and just walk on. It's like, what? Wait a minute. Did you hear me? Because they weren't listening. They weren't expecting an answer. I mean, that's the most obvious thing. How's it going? Well, you know, having an awful morning, or, you know, awful, you know, at work, oftentimes you have people who are not reservoirs of good feeling. And you say, well, how's it going? Oh, you know, it's Monday. You know, it's funny because Monday is awful and Friday they don't want to work because it's Friday. So when are they having a good day? I don't know. But, you know, even in my situation where I'm, you know, leaving the job I'm at, I still try to have a good attitude for people and not go moping around and say, oh, this is awful. This office is awful. The temperature is awful. My boss is awful. My coworkers are awful. My job is awful. I hate everything. No. React to people's felt needs. Get real answers. And talk to them about who God is. So here we have this guy out of the jail who just gave advice to the supreme ruler over all of Egypt, somebody who was in fact revered in Egypt as being divine, as being godly, a god of sorts. And the guy in jail just gave him advice. Now, I don't know what it was like in that room, but I can imagine there's just this hushed silence. Like, what just happened here? Verse 37. Now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and all his servants. I could just imagine one of those things. We just hear this collective sigh as people started breathing again. That nobody was going to die today. Verse 38. Then Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is a divine spirit? So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. So turn it around. Isn't that something that Joseph gave glory to God? And Pharaoh said, well, since God talks to you, then maybe if I put you in authority, that God will talk to all of us. And we can all listen to what God has to say. Verse 40, you shall be over my house. According to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne I will be greater than you. Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand and clothed him in garments of fine linen and put the gold necklace around his neck. He had him ride in his second chariot. They proclaimed before him, bow the knee. He set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh named Joseph Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, as his wife. And Joseph went forth over the land of Egypt. Most likely, by the way, that Potipharah was different than Potiphar, because Potiphar was never called priest of On. Verse 46. Now Joseph was 30 years old before he stood before Pharaoh. Well, when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. I proved last week that I can't subtract and preach at the same time. When you work it out, it was 13 years, not 23 years. I don't know where I got the 23 years from. I think I just picked up once again from somebody and I didn't bother calculating out for myself, but 30 minus 17 is indeed 13 years and not 23 years that he was in Egypt since he left home. But 13 years is still a powerfully long time to be bouncing around. We don't know how much of that time was spent in jail. Could have been as short as 3 years since, well, we know it was at least 13 years because it was, I'm sorry, we know at least 2 years because the cupbearer and it took him 2 years to remember. And then since the cupbearer and the baker had been there some time, probably at least a year, you know Joseph was in prison for at least 3 years, maybe longer than that. He could have been in prison for 10 of his 13 years. We don't know. But now here he is, after all that time, now he's not only out of jail. Back when Yom Passover, Dayenu, it would have been enough for Joseph to have been out of jail it would have been enough, Dayenu, for Joseph to have been a free man, Dayenu, but instead, here he is, he's the prime minister of all of Egypt. By the way, there are some people who think that Joseph might have been an individual in Egyptian history known as Imhotep. Some people identify Joseph with Imhotep. There's some issues with chronology that I look at it and I kind of scratch my head. I don't know if that's legitimate or not. But Imhotep has a lot of parallels with Joseph. So whether Imhotep was a legendary figure that came up from the real story of Joseph, or whether Imhotep and Joseph were the same, it's hard to say, but with Imhotep there is the same kind of deal, the 7 years of famine and all the rest of the stuff. So this might have found its way into Egyptian history. Hard to say. I was meant to bring a book with me. I think it's, the name of it's called Israel in Egypt, and I don't remember the author of it. I'll have to, if anybody's interested, I'll look it up or bring the thing with me next week. There's a lot of skepticism nowadays among archaeologists that the Bible is actually true, but as the author of this particular book that I was reading points out, that you have different camps who say the Bible isn't true, but they all disagree with each other. So even though one particular camp may think they're right, they all disagree with each other. So cut loose from the moorings of biblical history. Really, there is no truth, and nobody agrees with anybody else. Verse 48, so he gathered all, oh, I'm sorry, verse 47, during the 7 years of plenty, I'm sorry, I'm down a little further, aren't I? That's where I am. Verse 47, during the 7 years of plenty, the land brought forth abundantly, so he gathered all the food of these 7 years which occurred in the land of Egypt and placed the food in the cities. He placed in every city the food from its own surrounding fields. Thus Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he stopped measuring it, for it was beyond measure. I don't know if you've ever seen movies. One of the more recent one was the animated Prince of Egypt, where they're building the great grain cities of Egypt. And that was not much of an exaggeration, that Egypt had great cities in which they stored a great deal of grain for, you know, that originated in the time of Joseph to deal with these times of periodic famine. Verse 50, now before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph, from Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. He named the second Ephraim, for he said, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. When the 7 years of plenty which had been in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, just as Joseph had said, then there was famine in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So in all the land of Egypt was famished. The people cried out to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph. Whatever he says to you, you shall do. When the famine was spread over all the face of the earth, then Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. People of all the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe in all the earth. If Joseph really was Imhotep, this was really the resurgence of Egypt. Egypt had been in really hard, really been in decline, and this is where, really when Egypt once again became a major power in the Middle East because of the riches that came to them because of all this grain. Sort of interesting what Joseph didn't do, by the way, if you stop and think about it. He has now gotten his freedom. He is now the second in command of all of Egypt. He could do basically anything he wanted. He did not go to find his family. I found that's notable, considering what's going to go on in the succeeding chapter, that maybe he didn't trust his family all that much, because after all, they did sell him into slavery. That who knew what his family was like, that because of that, he did not go to find his family. If what Joseph's idea was to get back to his father's house, and this would have been the prime time. But he didn't. And even though at that time it wasn't like he called his father and his cell phone, still being the vizier of Egypt, he could have sent a garrison of soldiers and said, go find my father. Tell him I'm okay. He didn't do that. He didn't trust anyone. we have Joseph, whom God worked through to accomplish a great thing in Egypt. He gave God the glory. He was not shy about it. He didn't hide. As soon as he told Pharaoh exactly where this came from, that it is God who interprets dream, not I. That when Pharaoh asked him a question that was a felt need, Joseph went beyond the felt need to give him the counsel of God, which is something that we need to do when people come to us. And finally, God brought Joseph through all these circumstances till finally justice was done in the end. And more than justice, really, what we have here is not just justice, but we have God's grace to Joseph. Because Joseph deserved to be set free. He didn't deserve to be vizier over all of Egypt, but that's what he got. He got the grand abundance of God by standing forth in front of Pharaoh. And then we see that really the center of this story is not Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, but Joseph, the guy in the jail. And it's once again that this topsy-turvy way that God looks at the world as opposed to the way we look at the world. You know, we look at the government and we are, you know, tempted to bow down before leaders of the world and put them on a pedestal, but God really considers those who follow Him, the believers, to be those who are on the pedestal. And the rest of the world really revolves around God's plan. And God's plan doesn't just kind of fit in the spare time of what governments are doing, rather the other way around. And we can see what also out of this story, we can see what God can accomplish when He sets, when He, that is His intent. It's far beyond anything that we could accomplish. And when we look at stuff in our life and we say, how in the world is this ever going to work out? And there have been places in my life where I've said that. I said, how in the world am I ever going to get out of this? And it's like, doink, you know, why don't you pray about it, stupid? Okay. And then you pray about it, and funny thing, something comes out of left field that you never imagined could ever happen and delivers you from that situation that you were dealing with. And you move on. All comes from God. Remember to give Him the credit. Don't plagiarize God. Not a good idea. That's right. Dear God and Father, I thank You for all the ways in our lives that You have worked in and through us. Forgive us for not giving You the glory, but rather taking the credit for ourselves, either overtly or by our silence. Give us the courage and wisdom to ascribe credit where credit is due, that You might get the glory and not us, that we might trust You even in the midst of very difficult situations, and that we might have the faith in You and Your Word to give people the counsel that they need rather than the immediate answers that they want, in order that You might be able to work abundantly in their lives, and that Your name and the name of our Messiah, Yeshua, might be lifted up. Amen.